Up the closing bit, so hopefully I can keep you all amused for the next little while. Okay, so this is Wireshark 101, or how can I figure out what the Flamer network is doing? I guess most of us have had plenty of times, whether it's at home or in our workplace, where we really are struggling. We're working maybe not on systems that we are familiar with. And we're also working with, I guess, other groups, developers. We're integrating with other systems. And I guess often I find people fly blind, and there's really no need to. Okay, so basically I'm just going to cover very quickly a little bit about networking and I guess why you would need something like Wireshark. Go through some of the scenarios that you might use it in, and make it, I guess, go through a very quick hands-on of how to use it. How many people have used Wireshark, or what, as it used to be called, Ethereal? Okay, cool. All right, so some of you have, and some who has never used any packet capture program at all of any kind? Great, okay. All right, so most of you are pretty familiar with it, so I guess hopefully I can add some value to what you know. So what's this? Anybody, you know, get an idea going? Yep, someone? Morse code, yeah, it could be Morse code, okay. This is, this could be a representation of what's going in the airways at the moment, or a bit of Ethernet cable. So lots of ones and zeros. Okay, so, and I've represented it as ones and zeros in the next bit. So we've taken the electrical signal, ones and zeros. Still not very familiar, looks like noise. All that sort of thing. Go a little bit further. Okay, some people are better at reading hex, might be able to pick out a few characters in there, probably in that 2 to 3 to 4 hex range. So it's probably ASCII, a lot of it. We keep going through. Okay, this is a bit more familiar. Everybody could probably guess it. It looks like part of an HTTP GET request. Still, there's components in there that are not broken out very easily. Obviously, the beginning part of this packet, pretty unrecognizable. So anyway, it's converted to ASCII. Okay, so what we really want is something that looks like this. And this is the sort of thing that we will see in a Wireshark details field. Of course, it's really broken down the whole packet into something that can be readily absorbed, that we can analyze, and we can do we can really find out what's going on. So there's two aspects around networking that we would want a tool to be useful for. One is around, I guess, the encapsulation and transport. So we're taking a message, we're wrapping it up we're maybe writing it on an envelope, on a letter, putting it in an envelope. It's getting transported somewhere else and moved around. So we want to be able to pull that whole thing apart. The other thing is the actual movement of that packet around the intertubes. I think that Andrew was referring to yesterday. We can have different ways of representing sort of things. So this is a routing map from a shipping line. The Sydney City Rail network has a similar idea. And so you want to be able to, from your network, really get a good understanding of where your data is going and how it's being used. Okay, so what's a packet? So a packet, in this case, we're talking about, again, that HTTP GET request. It's very much encapsulated in different layers. So we, I guess, if we're decoding the packet, we would first get a physical layer frame that has source and destination, physical address. It has an Ethernet type or a length, depending on whether we're talking about 802.3 or the regular Ethernet. Then, as we go down through the layers, we might have inside it an IP packet, again some header information, and then as we go further down, we get more and more detail. Now, when that packet traverses the network, obviously as it's going through the network, we need to there are different components that are going to be interested in different bits. The switch, the wireless network is going to be more interested in this physical layer. The router and the firewall in the IP layer, the hosts obviously need to, when they receive a packet on port 80, they need to make sure that that goes to the web server application on port 22 to the SSH daemon and so forth. So I guess at this at this juncture, a tool needs to be able to help you on both levels, both understanding what the, I guess, the inner workings of the application are concerned, but also, you know, why things aren't going where they're supposed to be going. Okay, so again, a network flow starts at a request, a GET from a browser or a WGET, and traverses the network. Various things happen to it, and eventually that request reaches a server, again listening on a number of ports. So obviously the network tool, we can capture that data at different points. So if you're, I guess, trying to troubleshoot a very specific problem, and you know it's pretty well the application layer, you might want to look at it from the client's point of view. So you might capture data at the client machine. If you've got lots of machines, or if you don't have good access to the client, you might want to be capturing at a hub on a dumb hub or a repeater. The reason why you might have such a device is that, as you know, lots of our network devices are switched devices, which means that the traffic that is going between two different users might not be visible in another part of the network, and so you need to have some way of seeing possibly all of the traffic. So the older dumb hubs and repeaters can be useful for that. Of course, more higher end, if you like, switches, higher than the ones you would buy in your supermarket — we don't buy switches in supermarkets, but you know what I mean — will have the capability of doing things like port mirroring, where you can capture elsewhere. On a box that's tending to running something like a Linux or a BSD or a router, often has a packet capture capability built in. So you might want to capture there. Obviously, in thin air, we can capture wirelessly. So it actually, as well. So depending on what you're trying to do, you might want to be invoking the packet capture in different parts of your network. So what can you capture with? Of course, Wireshark that we'll go into, and its CLI equivalent, T-Shark, are able to capture from most network medium. Most appliance type boxes, pretty well every standard Unix box, and a lot of Linux distros used to include TCP dump by default, but they tend not to anymore. Maybe they don't want to. The distro people don't feel they want to give too much power to the average end user. I'm not sure, but it's certainly usually very easily installable. Even if the problem is with Wireshark, it relies on GTK and other things. So TCP dump is a good low-level tool to do your actual capturing, even if you analyse with Wireshark later. I think Snoop was on Solaris by default for a while. You can, if you have to play around on Windows machines, Netmon, it hasn't been updated for donkey's years, but it still, I think, can be installed fairly easily on the various server disks. Again, a lot of appliances have it built in, and there's commercial products. Sniffer's probably the one most people think of, but there are a lot of commercial products. Wireshark can read most capture file formats. And how do you get it? I mean, if you're running a Debian type distro, just apt-get install, and I'm sure it's similar on pretty well most distros. It can be downloaded from wireshark.org, and there are mailing lists and very active mailing lists, both in terms of user and development, that you can use for more information. Okay, so I'll guess go into the, I guess, nitty-gritty of how you might use the tool. When you install it in, at least on Ubuntu, you'll find that you actually end up with two icons, the Wireshark and Wireshark as root. Now, because it has to turn your Ethernet device in promiscuous mode, which means basically listen to all traffic, not just traffic that would be normally destined to your machine, capturing you normally run as root. Now they are changing the model a little bit in sort of the newer releases to try to reduce the amount that's required to run as root. So that is changing because they recognise there is a potential hole, and there has been over the time a few exploits where captured packets create buffer overflows, and of course that's not a very very nice thing to happen. So in terms of capturing data, you basically have on Linux all of your interfaces that are available will pop up. Basically any interface that is active and is receiving packets will show up here. I'm just wondering why that popped out of monitor mode. Sorry? This always happens when you do a demo. I was picking it up straight away before. Okay. Anyway, I was getting bucket loads of captures before on there. So you would normally have those captures. You'd have a count there of your active interfaces of what's going on. Now at this level, you've got opportunity to do a number of things. Capture filter is the same as your TCP dump filter. So if you're familiar with TCP dump, you can put something like, based on host or protocols, and there's a few samples that actually come in. So like, for instance, based on an Ethernet address or an Ethernet host, IP just by a host, by particular protocols, you can do that. And you can save them all in here as well, which is quite handy. The other thing is updating in real time. So If you don't have a particularly busy network and you want to actually see things as they come in, you can turn that on, and then you can choose to do automatic scrolling. So I find that quite useful when I'm capturing and I'm really wanting to understand what's going on the network. The other thing is you've got opportunity to resolve names here. One of the important ones that normally is off, that I normally would turn off by default, is the name resolution, because that means that every time it sends a new IP address, it will start doing DNS lookups, which is probably not what you want to do. The other thing where I've used this quite often, where I've sat it on a server for maybe a week or so, is that I'll use the multiple files and then set up basically a snapshot, say every hour. So yeah, I might select an hour, every hour, and that way I get a brand new file every hour. And you basically put a name in there that it starts off with, and then each file ends up being separated by other, because you can end up with, as you know, hundreds of megabytes per file, so it's quite easy to use that way. You can do various stops, of course, if you know your disk is going to fill if you let it go overnight, all sorts of things like that. You can also control how many packets you want to capture, because you may only be interested in IP addresses, so you don't need to go very far into the packet. I tend to try to capture a lot if I can, because it means that I'm not thinking later when I'm doing some analysis that I need to get more data that I just don't have. So again, that's something that you might have to think about. So once you actually have some data, and I'll pull up the things I have there. Okay, so once you've got a whole lot of data in, Okay, we can start off at the detail level, but generally, I guess, if you want to get an overview of what's going on, you really want to start going through these menus in the statistics. So we get a good idea, for instance, of how many packets that we've seen and how much data and that sort of thing going through the network. And then so that's the very, very high level. But as you're going down, you want to start thinking, okay, what protocols have I got? In this case, I've only got two protocols. I've got DNS and ARP. So obviously, a large capture, you'll have a whole range of different protocols that you'll see. Generally, obviously, Ethernet and IP is going to be the top level, but then as you go down, you'll get more and more detail. Some of these can be exported, some of them can't, so most of these ones you can't export, which I think would be a great thing to add. Conversations will give you a view from different levels. So obviously at the physical level, and we move left to right, we're tending to move from physical level up. We've got three different devices or three different conversations happening at Ethernet level. At IP, we have a whole lot of different ones. So obviously we're talking to a router. Router's only going to have one MAC address, but we're going to have lots of IP conversations. And then if we had UDP, if we had multiple ports in there, they would show up in here. In this case, they're all DNS, so they're all showing up as a one port. We can turn off name resolution and we get a feel of what's going on there. Okay. I'll go into IO graphs later. So coming back to, the detailed view, this is where you're going to want to start to isolate what you're looking for. So we know that I knew from the summary view that we had both ARP and DNS, so we can put very simple filters in here, and so we don't want to see the ARP requests. We could say I don't want to see the ARP requests, right? So I'll see everything else. And then, obviously, I can put DNS. Now, one of the things you probably notice that it's helping you, if you just type rubbish in there, it goes red, and then if you get something that's valid, it goes green. Makes it really, really easy when there's hundreds of protocols and hundreds of different options. The other way that I find is really good for just coming up with a filter, because I guess, certainly if you're getting a little bit grey like I am, I'm starting to forget things that I probably only learnt yesterday, is that when you start decoding your protocol, so you might be interested in a very particular part of a packet. So for instance, we might be wanting to look at, say, the TCP source address from a particular host. So as down the bottom here, you'll see in the status bar, you can see that. You'll see the little flag. Now that's basically where Wireshark is tokenizing things. Now I can right click on any field and basically either prepare a filter, which just means it pops up in that area, or I can right click and apply and it immediately uses that filter. Now I can use that and then I can very quickly go in and say, really what I might be interested in is the I don't know why I can't type in there. Bad things happening. Come back, please. Oh, look. It's probably doing a lookup. This is doing. That's really bad. I won't do that anymore. And that's why I know everybody uses Open Office presentations or PDFs. They never try to do things live. All right, you can get the idea anyway. Once you've got a filter, you can then start filtering on particular things there. I won't risk it again. Okay. So, but each of these fields will have things. Now you can get the most, what I'll do is I'll bring up the an HTTP one. So clear that. So this one's got lots of, this is a sort of a full capture, including spanning tree and all sorts of things on there. So again, if we can put HTTP, we'll just see the HTTP there. Now, we're getting gets and responses. So for some reason, my keyboard's working and I just didn't manage to get away with it. We can just go HTTP request and that sort of thing. So, you know, you can imagine it's very quickly to build a filter. And then as you see your responses coming in, you can really make use of that. Now, I guess what you might want to be doing is say once you've sort of isolated where you want to do things, you might want to look at say things like response times and that sort of thing. So in these sort of windows, in this window, I can do things like set a marker time, and so you've got a reference time, so you can see all subsequent packets in relation to that particular packet. I can also right-click and mark a packet, and then you can use that for exporting and printing and that sort of thing. So there's lots of things you can do there. Now, as you go into each of these protocols, some of them are better decoded than others. Obviously, the more prominent protocols, there's lots of very good work is done. So it's very nicely divided up into the request, the method, and that sort of thing. Now, you can write your own plugins and parsers, and they can be added in basically at load time as well. So one of the things that I tend to get involved a lot in is looking at, you know, is the network a real problem here? And sometimes it's around response time and things like that. So it's particularly, there's some really nice features, again, in this statistics view that allow you to do a whole lot of, I guess, get a good idea of what's going on. So probably the simplest one is the IO graphs. So in this case, oops, gluey computer thing. So in this case, it's the default basically just shows up all of the packets and in against the second. Now, I tend to think in bits, bits per second. I guess it comes from like a networking background. And it's nice to have 1 second interval, depending on how much data you might want to make it longer or shorter. Obviously, these are important things, particularly when you're working with web developers and the like, because they'll think in terms of, oh, we've got a megabit per second WAN link. Why can't we, you know, we send so much data? Now, obviously, if you're looking at things at 10 second sample or the like, you'll get a different view there from 1 second. So in this case, we're getting what, nearly 900 kilobits per second, whereas if I look at say a 1 second interval, you'll see the bursting at a whole lot of different. Now this is in the sample, so we're looking at a one second sample. Sorry, I'll sort of the other way around. So at a 10 second, that's a 10 second interval. So this is 900 kilobits per 10 seconds, thank you, per 10 seconds. So that's only about 90 kilobits per second on average. But of course, at a 1 second interval, all of a sudden we're starting to see much bigger spikes up to 500 kilobits per second. So these are really important things because once you're starting to saturate your network or your network links, you start to see where the bottlenecks lie. Now, obviously, we might want to divide up by traffic going out and traffic coming in. So we might just have a source. And it doesn't like me typing numbers in there for some reason. That's mad. Okay. Anyway. No, that should all work swimmingly. I just don't understand what's going on there. I've got two instances running, so that might be doing bad things. I'll just close that one. But I don't think it's that. Anyway, you can apply filters here, so traffic in and out. So the same sort of filters. The other The other thing you can do is you can do counts of certain traffic. So one of the really useful things, if you go in advanced view, if you haven't used this before, and then you might have counts of particular packets. Now, I've got a fulfillment. So I would normally put something like http.request. And accounts in there. And so you would normally put a count of packets. So just put that in here as well. So that way I'm only filtering those packets. Okay, and let's change the interval. And trying to think why. Well, that's not showing up there, and I can't think of why it's not showing up there. So normally, actually, it would be filled with a value. Actually, that's right. Sorry. Bad example. So normally, for instance, one of the things I put a flag there, when I say a flag count is one, and it'll give you the number of counts where that's equal to one, and things like that. So you'll get a counter along there. The other thing too that's very useful is things like when you want to look at actual response time. So we can bring up a round trip time graph. So this is showing round trip time based on the TC on the AX coming back. So again, you can get a good feeling for what's going on there. One of the things that I did recently, we were looking at response time between the client and the server, or from the client's point of view and the server point of view. So we had captures done both at the client end and the server end. And so, because one of the problems is if you're at a client end, you're not always certain, you know, where is my delay occurring. So by using this sort of graph, you can get a much, much better feel for what's going on there. And depending on which end you click. So in this case, I've selected a packet that's looking. And I'll just change that. A packet that's going from the client out towards the server. If you go from the other end, so from the server side looking in, then when you bring up response time, you'll get a response time of what the server would sort of see from the client. So, you know, as you're seeing the response time of the client as it's processing TCP segments. There's also, some really, really nice things in here that if you haven't seen it, so you can bring up, say, a VoIP session. And then we go in here, RTP, showing all the RTP streams. As we go through there, we see the streams, and we've got 5 minutes. It's cool. Thank you. So we might have a stream that we want to look at. Now, what we can actually do is analyze that, and so we can actually see jitter and things like that on our RTP sessions. We can also graph that, lots of great things. And I've just lost where the player is. For some reason I just can't see it in front of me now anymore. Maybe I've come in the wrong way. Analyze. Summary, RTP, stream analysis. Oh, that's why, it's because I'm looking at the, I need to look at the streams. So I look at the RTP. Okay, that's the string. Why can't I? Well, the player is not coming up here anymore. It's just one of those things when you're doing a presentation. You can actually play the audio, and that's why I'm not. Why can't I? Yeah, it's actually, sorry? Yeah, anyway, there it is, voice calls. The two screens look very similar, and that's why I was a bit confused. There we are. So we click on player, and decode shows you the field, and then we can play, and I've got the volume up enough. That's all right.
Hello, is that you, Jeremy?
This is me talking to my son.
Oh, that's good. Do you know that your voice is being recorded?
So it's very clear, and even more innocuous, like fairly innocuous things, when you pick up, say, your HTTP session, and if you can find an HTTP request, okay, we've got a request in there, pick up, say, actually that wasn't what I was looking for, so simple JPEG image, I think these are all good. Okay, we go in there, and then when you actually see the data, so there's a whole lot of CompuServe data there, and you can actually go export selected bytes to a file. So you go file.gif, and there it is there. So it's a very tiny little icon. Okay, with a little file icon. There was another one I had before. I can't find it. But anyway, it's pretty useful. I mean, obviously, you could look for various, particular JPEG file types or particular errors and that sort of thing. But I guess that's going beyond the network, well into the application layer. But certainly, the sort of problems that I've seen, you know, one example was seeing lots of very same CSS files being dragged over a WAN link multiple times, JavaScript libraries. And these were consuming most of the bandwidth, and it was just really the lack of caching, or the lack of caching information being sent out by the proxy, by the application server. It was a particular brand's something logic server that doesn't send any headers out that gave any opportunity to do any caching. So You can actually do a lot of information that really an application developer you would expect would be understanding, but again, they've set something up. They're relying. They're really just pushing packets as far as they can see, or pushing data. Anyway, any questions? That's pretty well where I've got to. I mean, any particular situations that you might want to ask of how you would analyse things? Yep. Yep. There is a way of, and I'm trying to remember now what's happened with it. I haven't used it, but there is a way of basically opening a pipe and sending the data out remotely. I tend to just capture it locally, because the problem is that it becomes like a, was it Heisenberg sort of thing, where you're affecting the network by sending a whole lot of data back. So, and the same problem can be if you're capturing on the server or the client in question. So it is always better to do it out of band. Glenn earlier on talked about using a passive optical path. Or a span port on a high-end switch is just as good, because it's all done in hardware. I mean, these days, those high-end switches, the copying process is definitely done in hardware, so there really is no impact. But so generally, I would do that. You can merge and split data. So you can actually take the data. You could, for instance, take the client data and the server-oriented data, and then sort of filter it using the command line, and then merge it. Obviously, timing is an issue, and that's why you generally want to keep it separate. But yeah, there is some mechanisms for remotely doing that, but it's probably not as good as what it could be. Yep. Sorry, iSCSI. I haven't looked at it. I think there is some decoders for that in there. So So there's definitely a lot of decoders, and there's always new ones that are coming in progress, and ones that they do a better job on. But and even other media types, so like Bluetooth, there's some stuff in there, and even USB, you can do things. Yep, another one.
In the capturing section, WiveShark,
does
it have the ability to change files like every hour?
Yes.
Do you know
whether
it's
T-Sharp also? Yeah, I'm trying to... Well, okay, what I tended to do is limit the counts with T-Shark, because you can do it. I don't think you can do it time-wise. Oh, I've forgotten now. But you can certainly limit the number of counts, and what I've tended to do is just rotate it around that way. Certainly, Wireshark is a lot better at that setting those loop ones up. Or someone like, yep, at the back. Yep. Sure. Yep. Now it does a pretty good job of doing things like, the question was around tunneling traffic. So if you've got traffic inside an SSL tunnel, if you've got it inside SSH, and that's provided you've got the keys, you can actually you can tell Wireshark to use those keys, and it will decrypt it. GRE tunnels, IP and IP. You can do all those things. You've got to have the keys installed, and it will do that. There are different issues, of course, around the fact that you've got multiple headers and that sort of thing. So if you're trying to do counts on data, you can get sort of multiple, you know. It can be a bit tricky in some of the fields, and I know on the development list, you know, there's always debates about, you know, do you count if it's IP and IP, is that two IP packets or one, and all sorts of things. The other good thing is there's an export. If you totally don't like the way Wireshark handles things, you can export in what's called PDML, which is like an XML format. And so I've written some Python stuff to start teaching myself more or less how to use that, and you can manipulate your data yourself. I think I've only got maybe one more question, and that's it. Yep.
Just a security topic. Wireshark and Ethereum before has had a huge history of problems in the various plugins and coders particularly. So if
yes.
you're using them on suspect data, don't do it on an insecure operating
yeah.
system. Don't do it on your desktop.
Yeah.
Backup,
yeah. 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 Yeah, well, I mean, certainly the important thing would be if you're taking data from an unknown source, Yeah, well, that's right. Probably isn't a good idea to run that as root, and that's why they're changing the model so that it really limits the ability of analysing unknown data. I haven't had any problem, to be honest, and I'm not. And most of the time, I'm inside a network. I'm not really, out on the raw internet. Obviously, occasionally you might run around and do a sniff of a wireless network to see what's going on. But it's a good thing to think about. I think that's about all time we've got. So come and see me later if you have any other questions.
Thanks, Martin. That seemed like more.